There are certainly pluses and minuses that come with the job of Oregon's poet laureate. You don't make as much money as the governor or the university football coach, but you also don't have to balance the entire state budget, and you're not expected to beat Stanford. And you get to travel around the state delivering poetry, listening to other people's poetry, and promoting the whole idea of poetry. The previous Oregon poet laureate, Paul Ann Peterson, visited a couple of times. Today we get to say hello to Peter Sears, a graduate of Yale and the Iowa Writers' Workshop. He has taught at Reed College in Portland, served as dean of students at Bard College. He's been community services coordinator for the Oregon Arts Commission and director of the Oregon Literary Coalition. He currently teaches in the Pacific University Low Residency MFA Department and splits his time between Corvallis and Portland. His latest book is called Small Talk, New and Selected Poems. Peter Sears, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks very much. I'm honored to be here.
That's quite
on your show.
Quite a resume we got to read there, but I must say I'm intrigued by the term low residency MFA department. What's that?
Low residency means simply that the students come to the university for two periods during the year, for about 10 days each, and they take their courses and their, you know, do readings and have workshops and panels and whatnot. It's very intense. And then the rest of the time, they are working on their own at home and mailing their stuff in at regular intervals. The advantage of this program, which is not to say it's necessarily better than a traditional program, but the advantage is that one can maintain residency and a job and, you know, be a caretaker in a family or whatever the case might be and go away for just a short period of time. Whereas in a traditional MFA program, you come to the university and you stay there. You know, you take your courses there. Mm-hmm. So it's dramatically different. I no longer teach in that. I'm doing the poet laureate program now. It's pretty demanding. And I do some other teaching. But anyway, I was a little leery of it at first when it started, but the low residency. However, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for a lot of people. Otherwise, wouldn't be able to do that. You know, they just wouldn't be able to go back to school. It's too big a deal.
Sure, this way they get to spend a little time there and get to keep their jobs. It's almost like...
it's great.
Almost like spending time in the National Guard or something.
It's exactly like that. Good. That's a very good simile for it, yeah.
You, in fact, spent some time in the military yourself, didn't you, Peter Sears? And some of your poetry started around that time?
I did. It didn't have anything to do, really, with the Army, but I'd had an interesting time at college as an English major. And I loved contemporary poetry, and I read the modernist poets, and, you know, I naturally imitated them. I wanted to be like them. But in the Army, you can't do a whole lot of writing, you know, and whatever you're writing, you have to put in your back pocket, and you have to button your button in the back pocket, so you couldn't carry a manuscript around with you. But I did sort of, I started then. However, I basically just worked, you know, for a number of years. I never thought about poetry in a professional way. It was just a hobby. And I would submit things to magazines as the years went by. I was teaching and dean of students or in publishing. And then I had an opportunity to apply to teach at Reed College in the early 70s. And I was lucky enough to get the job. So that kind of got me going on a track where there was a professional connection to poetry. And poetry is a sort of a funny, very specialized world, so you don't expect to have a professional success there necessarily. You just want to write poems and send them out and hope to get published. So I was very fortunate, I think, you know, looking over the span of my career, if that's the right word.
And did the Iowa Writers' Workshop really help you polish up your style?
Yes, it sure did. See, I was the oldest person there. In the workshop, I went late, you know, I didn't start this poetry stuff really early. I just kept, you know, dabbling, as it were, from the Army on. And then in my late 30s, I went to the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And I had made a lot of the mistakes that the younger people hadn't made yet.
What kinds of mistakes?
Well, just writing obscurely, privately, and, you know, and not thinking about having an audience and not addressing my subjects emotionally directly, you know, just kind of carrying on with a lot of big words and a lot of obscure images, and bad syntax, and, you know, dangling modifiers, you know, all the stuff they give hard time to journalist people. Journalism was a great thing to study, I think, for poets.
You certainly learned to get your chops because you have to write fast.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But many of the principles of writing good poems apply to prose, too, in a very direct way, because you have to consider how you're going. Anyway, that's my belief, that you really have to consider accessibility. I mean, if you have a big backstory, you have to consider how you're going to, put that in the poem, and quickly. Poetry doesn't allow much time for that, unless you're going to write,
It sounds like it's a more revealing process than you expected it to be, that you really have to reveal more of yourself through your poetry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it acts as a kind of a cheap therapy, because you can write poems that address personal problems. So you can't do it very directly. You can't sit there and say, I'm sitting around wondering about my fear or my anxiety, but you can write about, you can come at it obliquely through characters or through metaphors. And it's a good thing to try to do. In graduate school, we spoke of it as a kind of poetry of confrontation.
All right, we'll pick it up on the other side of a break. Poetry of Confrontation is a good place to take a pause. We'll come back and talk much more with Peter Sears, Oregon's new poet laureate, back on the Jefferson Exchange with Peter Sears and his poetry, and your thoughts and comments if you'd like to join us on the Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Oregon's Poet Laureate. It is not the same Poet Laureate we had on the last two times. This time it's Peter Sears, who assumed the reins from Paul Ann Peterson earlier this year. He is now the person who gets to travel the state of Oregon promoting poetry, reading his own poetry, hearing poetry from other people. And it's a fun job by the sounds of it. Busy, though, as he's telling us. He has an appointment in Ashland tonight at 7:30 at the Gresham Room of the Ashland Public Library. He'll move on to Lincoln City in the days ahead as well. You can join us here and now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, call 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So, Peter, you were just talking about poetry as cheap therapy and confrontation in poetry. What are you confronting here?
Well, you're confronting some problem or question, and you drive the poem at it, and you try to make the poem dramatically interesting. It's not necessarily, a linear resolution. It's a it's an examination. It's a confrontation. It's an assault. And you try to make the poem read as an event of its own through the language. By that I mean it's not sort of a linear, descriptive, declarative. You have to try to make it musical and evocative, and that's really the difference. I mean, that's what poetry is all about.
So when you look at your poems before you you learned a lot of what you now know at the Iowa Writers' Workshop and the poems since, I mean, is it just like night and day?
No, they're not. They're a lot, they are. And that's hard to say. I was so tuned to reading the moderns that their lines and their music was really in my head. And in a sense, I had to write my way through that. In other words, when you're young, and you read Dylan Thomas, you just imitate Dylan Thomas if you love his poetry, or William Carlos Williams or T.S. Eliot. And that's a problem. You've got to keep going through that and write your own poems. And there's no book on that subject. You have to do that yourself.
Well, we actually, by happy accident, have an example of one of your poems being read aloud on national radio earlier this week because
right.
2 days ago, Garrison Keillor featured your poem on the Writer's Almanac, and we grabbed that out of the Writer's Almanac. So here, let's listen to Night Fishing, read by Garrison Keillor.
Right. Oh, great.
Here's a poem for today by Peter Sears, Night Fishing. The water is a glaze like loneliness at ease with itself. I cast and close my eyes for the whir out across the water, the line striking the surface and sinking. I like waiting for it to settle on the bottom, then jig it up a little. I imagine the lure in utter dark. I play it lightly. Fish rise. just shy of the surface, they play their glints off the moon on the water. I see, too, my own loneliness. It's not too big, and it breathes easily. Soon it may pretend it's rain. Rain blurs the water. There is nothing wrong with rain. I take a deep breath and cast and cast.
That the voice of Garrison Keillor from the Writer's Almanac from the first hour of the Jefferson Exchange 2 days ago, reading Night Fishing, a poem by Peter Sears, our guest, Oregon's poet laureate. It was just such a happy accident. We had to include that in the program. Must be nice to have your poems read by somebody with a voice like that.
Well, you know, maybe he could come and read a few more tonight at the reading. That would be nice. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, he's one of the great storytellers in the country. You know, he doesn't go around to writing workshops and stuff like that, but boy, they could learn a lot from him. And I think one of the primary qualities about it comes out in the reading of this poem, and that's pacing. He never hurries. He doesn't drop the vowel sounds. He stays with the rhythms. And if you notice, I mean, you know, he reads that poem in a really soft, slowly moving way, and it's supposed to sort of, you know, reflect the movement of water, you know, at night, which is very slow. It's not, you know, rippling and busting around. And the mood of the poem, and it's more really important, that sort of movement. The one sentence that's inflected somewhat differently than the others is the one, I see, too, my own loneliness. And it's meant to be that way. And that placement of the T-O-O, single syllable there, that's intentional. I mean, I wrote that out about 20 different ways before I picked that off as the one I thought I should go with.
So there really is a lot of sculpting and manicuring that it sounds like when you get into the real nitty gritty.
Sculpting and manicuring, that's damn nice. I might use that.
Feel free. But you really do. So essentially you're agonizing over parts of it, but I mean, does the whole come together first? Do you sort of drape the poem loosely across the framework first and then do the tightening?
Yes. You drape it. That's nice. You know, that's the whole thing I had to get started, is the draping. And then the big question about the poem was how to address the issue after going through, you know, the metaphor of the water and the fishing, and how to come up to the idea of loneliness, whether or not to actually mention it again. And I took the gamble, and I did. I see, too, my own loneliness, and then I sort of modify it. I cut it back a little bit. You know, it's not all that bad, and it's not a big deal, and it's sort of like rain and that kind of stuff. So those lines I worked with for a long time. They're ending the last three or four lines. I hate to lay out all the dirty laundry about it, but, you know, you asked a good question, so that's what I did. And I try to make it sound, you know, very natural, but also surprising. That the lines, you know, reverberate emotionally, not necessarily rationally. And I took some chances there. It was a longer poem earlier. It got more involved with itself, and I think it got a little fastidious, and so I cut a lot of it out. It's always good to cut. I learned that from Dick Hugo. He was my primary teacher. He said, if you don't know about it, just cut it out and see what happens when it's not there. It's great advice.
It is amazing sometimes in writing, isn't it? The things that you thought were so valuable in the first place.
Yeah, I know. Often the starting lines, you know, are the ones, because they're really a line of an idea, and they're not in the right modulation.
Huh. Interesting concept. So you must have a small talk, new and selected poems at your elbow, I'm thinking. So why don't you grab a poem and pick one, and let's hear you.
Well, how about that poem, Smalta, that poem, Petals? Is that all right? Would you like that?
Yeah, Petals is great. Then I want to talk about the story behind it when we get to the back end of it.
Pardon me?
I want to talk about the story behind Petals when we get to the back end of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll read it. I'll just go ahead and read it, right?
Yes, please.
Okay. Petals. There you were in the first X-ray, slapped up on the office wall. See, the doctor said, pointing at you with his cue, gingerly, as if not to accuse you. Cancer tumor, you look like a donut. No, more like an igloo. But you had not begun to spread. So we'll get right in there, the doctor said, and operate on that tumor. As if I was going in with them, in with the doctor and the nurse, to see you up close, touch you, watch you be sliced out of my lung, then dropped in a dish. Then what? Toss in the garbage? Put in a urn? I look up. Again, at the X-ray slide, I could swear your clean borders have shifted. have begun to leak. We'll try to get you into surgery within a week, the doctor said. This morning, on my way to the hospital, April petals float at the traffic light while I wait for the red to turn to green. Petals so light, they glance off the traffic light, back into their slow flowing. I ask you, cancer cells, did you come to me like these morning petals and fall and drift onto other cells? Tell me, did you pile willy-nilly like snow, or did you float and fall and grow into obedient rows, building, building, row house after row house?
The poem is called Petals. The author and reader, Peter Sears, Oregon's Poet Laureate here in the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us on the Exchange to talk about poetry in general, Peter Sears more specifically, and the job of Poet Laureate as well. 800-838-3760 around the region in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email is jx@jeffnet.org. So you certainly give us a number of images to work with there, petals and snowflakes and row houses, each one seeming a little more substantial than the one before. But what you're talking about here is dealing with your own medical issues, which was something that I think you had said in other venues that it took you a while to write about.
Yes, I didn't write about having cancer right away because it wouldn't have worked. It would have just been sort of a boring, gruesome kind of journal. And so I needed to wait until I got a way to bring it out, to make it real. So two things developed here. One is the petals. I saw the petals, and they did remind me of what those cells sort of might look like if I was trying to envision them. I could see them as petals. You know, the snow, the petals off a tree in April, those great petals. And then, secondly, and the big thing that made the poem work is I moved it into a second person, direct address. I addressed the petals. I mean, I addressed the X-ray.
The tumor. You're eventually talking right to the tumor.
I addressed the cancer tumor. Mm-hmm. Cancer tumor. You look like a donut, no more like an igloo, but you've not begun to spread, so on and so forth. You know, so. And then I use lines of dialogue from the doctor to, you know, indicate how they're moving ahead and so on and so forth. And it's not the poem I necessarily would pick for a reading because, you know, it's a tough subject. But for people who've gone through that, it might have some meaning to them as far as, you know, getting through it or, you know, asking questions about their cancer. It's hard to write about the invisible, as it were. That's really what poetry's trying to do here. It's trying to do something you can't do in a normal way. So that's what I was trying to do. It's a pretty ambitious poem. I don't know how well it works, but it made it into this book. And I try to make the language very accessible. I try not to have any fancy words. You know, I have this line, put it in an urn, and I almost took that out because an urn is often sort of thought of poetically, as it were. But
oh, right. Ode to a Grecian urn. Sure.
Right. Yeah, right, right. So, but, you know, that X-ray slide, you know, when a doctor slaps it up, is it where they slap it on the wall? That's really powerful. You sit there and look at that. And, you know, you don't know quite what you're looking at.
Yeah, right, because it doesn't look like anything representational.
No, it doesn't look like anything. And the doctor sort of talks over your head and sort of talks as if he's sort of doing an errand, you know. We'll get you in right away. We'll take care, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyhow.
So do you have another poem you'd like to read, something that moves us away from the cancer ward?
Yeah, let's move away from that. Gracious. Now, this is a poem from early on. My first poem in Saturday Review, so I was really proud of this. And it's called A Place for Four-Letter Words. And again, I'm trying to confront something here, and I hope that's evident by the poem itself. I had it all wrong from the start about four-letter words. I thought they were big words with four letters. I thought about being wrong. I kept it quiet, cobweb quiet, like our house, even our garage, all but the shed where I kept my bike. I looked for a place to hear the words, all of them, before someone tried to tell me where this one belonged and that one didn't. Leaning streamlined over the handlebars, I heard them in the tires lick and spin, faster, tearing all out down a hill, hunched under the wind, blinking at the rain. I yelled every four-letter word I knew, yelled them until they were as real as a hill, yelled them until I broke them into spokes, and they were just words spinning in the spokes.
The poem is called A Place for Four-Letter Words. Peter Sears, its author, the poet, and the poet laureate of the state of Oregon here on the Jefferson Exchange. Some great images in there as well. Cobweb Quiet. It's not that we normally associate cobwebs with a sound or a not sound in this case, but visuals. Cobwebs. But that's great. It certainly indicates the idea that something's
nice
not moving.
Nice of you to seek that out. Yeah. So I waited around to find that word for a long time. I had a lot of different adjectives in there. You can't believe how many bad ones I had. Right. They were just awful.
Silent as the grave, things like that.
Getting too florid. I think it's really important to write about cathartic experiences for young kids, the private ones, because people don't hear about them. You know, they just think of kids as being sort of stupid and off to the side, you know. I mean, I'm talking about in a social situation, like a school or something like that.
You know? Yeah, seen and not heard, that sort of thing.
Right.
So, first of all, the whole process of becoming poet laureate, was it something you sought out? I mean, you get nominated for it, right?
Well, I went to a guy who I thought was wonderful and should be a poet laureate, and I called him up and told him I would like to support him, write his nomination. And make a long story short, I turned around and he came back at me and said, I want to write a nomination for you. That's the long and short of it.
And you didn't shrug him off, clearly.
No, I was quite honored. And you know, I thought, wow, that's great. So I'd accept that.
So did you have to
see where it goes?
You got interviewed, I'm thinking, right?
I got interviewed, yes, I did. By a group, a small group from the committee. And that was very exciting because I met some wonderful people.
And what sorts of advice did Pauline Peterson give you on her way out the door?
Well, Pauline's a friend, and so we talked often, and she's wonderful, and she's very supportive, and she does an amazing job. So it was just fun to talk with her about it. There wasn't anything particular, you know, about it. It's just it's something you have to stay up on. So there's a good deal of work to staying organized and being responsive to people when they call in. Their requests are sent to Oregon Humanities, who then send them on to me, and then I call them up or email them, and we go from there and setting arrangements. So you can't do everything you're asked, but you try to the ones where it means the most to the people that you're going to go there. And I try to focus on the ones where they want to have a workshop. They want to go over their own work and have responses to it. Because that's of personal importance. By that I mean not just give a reading, but, you know, do a poetry workshop.
Right, to help other people become better poets themselves.
Yeah, and in many cases, it's just to introduce them to it. I was just in Cave Junction last weekend up at the monument, you know, up at 4,000 feet, and I did a workshop, very few of the people had ever been in a workshop, much less read any contemporary poetry, and they were mostly forest rangers. And it was really exciting. I mean, they really took to it, and they had questions, and they wrote, and they were great. And I was really excited, you know. Most of the workshops I work with, they're fairly sophisticated. People write, and they know about it, and they read contemporary stuff, and, you know, they have good critical judgment, and so on and so forth. But these people came at it straight off. Naive, innocent, right at it, enthusiastic, willing. It was great.
So there's a great missionary aspect to the job, then, essentially, because you're trying to bring this to audiences that aren't necessarily poetry audiences in the first place. It's not just preaching to the choir.
No, you're not. That's what's really great. And the fact that they came, you see, that's the thing. You could have a poetry workshop in a town, and the only people who come to it are the people who already like poetry. And that is, in a sense, teaching the choir. You can't really avoid that necessarily. I mean, the sponsor does everything to try to get word out. But, you know, how many people just sort of go, well, sure, here's a poetry workshop. I'll go and do that. You know, they don't necessarily take to that. It's a pretty arcane kind of endeavor.
How does one teach poetry, in a sense? I mean, because, I mean, does everybody have some poetry in their souls, or are some people just
No, I mean, anybody can write a decent poem. What you try to do is you try to work with what you have, and you try to find the places in what they write that are the most expressive. And you tell them that. You say, these are the places I would come back to. You try to speak to them about their poem as if it's a draft for something they're going to develop.
So it's a stepping stone. It's a starting point, not the final destination.
It's not something you're going to critique and push down and criticize and grade, you know. But most people have a lot of performance anxiety because they were in school, you know. And so you have to come at it pretty gingerly.
All right, well, we'll figure out how that works out. We'll talk more with Peter Sears in just a few moments. He is Oregon's Poet Laureate and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His appearance tonight at 7:30 at the Gresham Room of the Ashland Public Library. We'll come back and take some phone calls and emails for Peter Sears when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the poet Peter Sears, but not just any poet. He is now Oregon's Poet Laureate, has been for a couple of months, succeeding Paul Ann Peterson. He's a graduate of Yale and the Iowa Writers' Workshop, has taught at Reed College, Bard College, and Pacific University. He now spends his time between Portland and Corvallis, and of course, traveling the state of Oregon promoting poetry. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the process of poetry and the job of Oregon's Poet Laureate. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So everybody does have some poetry in them, you say, and you have to approach them gingerly when they're putting their first efforts out there. So how not snuff out that flame that is just a flicker with that first draft?
Well, you have to make sure that you create trust with them, that they believe you are trying to help them, and that you enjoy this process of talking with them about what they wrote, no matter how awkward, gruesome, whatever the writing may be. You just talk to them about it. Very often, there's a story. Coming at this is very much like coming at prose. I mean, you can try to get a prose paragraph. You don't worry about lining. But you ask them questions about what they wrote. You know, what's the story here? What's going on? And there's a lot of practical questions you can ask. You can, you know, just like, I can't quite see the scene. You know, maybe there's some more details you could put in, or what time of the day is it? Who else is there? And you ask other questions, and they keep answering the questions, and then you say, well, why don't you try building the piece up with some of those details? That sends them back in, and then they address the language a little bit differently and try to find a good starting line, ending line. Ending lines are hard until you sort of figure out what the poem's about. But talking to them really about what the poem is about is really finally the most important and the best thing. That's the most exciting thing to them.
You mentioned hacking off a lot of stuff at the beginnings of poems. Do you tend to do that at the end as well? You decide
absolutely. Absolutely.
So you stick
with
them.
I mean, Jesus, you know, you're really looking for the best stuff. It's not that what you wrote is bad. It's just that it's not all that good. And in poetry, you have to go for stuff that's really good. And it gets harder as you go along, and it's more fun. I thought sports were the hardest thing and the best thing to do, but I think writing poetry and teaching. Teaching is as hard as writing poetry because you have to really address where the individual is. And they're very close. They're real art forms. I think they're the great art forms.
Teaching and poetry.
And again, that's my leaning, teaching and poetry, yeah.
Well, speaking of which, I want to talk about one of the things you have introduced in your time as Oregon's Poet Laureate. And it's just been what, since July, June?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. But that's the Expanding Voices Project. Yeah. So tell us about that and what you want to do there.
Well, I love the whole program of the Poet Laureate, but I did think it was a little confined, and that's not anybody's fault. By that I mean sort of focused on one person, and, you know, and they went around, had to represent poetry all the way around, and everything was in English, and you know, the state is multilingual, to say the least, but we don't hear a great deal about that. And I thought it would be a good idea to invite people who write in another language to read with me, to read what they wrote, let's say in Spanish, and then to read a translation that they wrote of their piece, and then to sit on the stage with me and talk about it a little bit, like what happens when you move from Spanish to English, how does the piece change and whatnot. The language is really fascinating, and the crossover is really interesting, and I like expanding the base of it to more voices around Oregon. I'm going to be out in Pendleton, and I'm doing an Expanding Voices reading in which I have a retired Spanish teacher who writes in Spanish to read her pieces and then read the translations. And then I have two Native American prose writers who are going to join me, and they're going to read their pieces, and I'm going to talk to them about that. And if there's any time left, I'll read some poems. But my reading poems is not that important. It's getting these people out. And the point is simply to extend the audience to, you know, the whole state. Now, maybe only three or four people come to this event. That's really not what's critical. What's important is that the official movement of poetry in the state through the image of the Poet Laureate position has extended, welcomed people from all different languages. I have people in Russian, you know, and I've already set up a number of these. I'm very excited about this. I like the idea of being a facilitator very much, because I'm such a blowhard to start with. You know, it's really important to just to reach out and put my arm around other people. And I'm very interested in poetry in other languages. And you know,
does a lot get lost in translation? And I wonder this particularly, and we talked about this with Paul Ann Peterson as well, like the wonderful poems of Wisława Szymborska, the Polish poet.
Yes.
But I just have to wonder, every time I look at the bottom and it says translated from the Polish by, and I just wonder the choices that got made by the translator and what they might have done.
Exactly. It's very hard. But in this case, the translation is being done by the person who wrote the poem. So they're really, you know, this is not an accomplished poet necessarily. These are amateur poets for whom exposure is really, really important. They've never had exposure like this before. You know, nobody said, you know, included them. In other words, when they read, they probably read to their own audience. And I just think it's important. Now, once you get into translation, it's a different matter. I have a couple of people I hope to have read with me who are really, you know, accomplished poets in their language. And we can talk a little bit more about translation there. It's really an important art form. Now, you know, talking about the poet that you mentioned, you know, obviously I can't get her on the program, but maybe there's somebody who knows the language, loves it, loves her poetry, and would like to read her poetry and read then the translation that she or he favors. That would be good. That would be an expansion. That would be expanding voices. I can't expect that everybody both writes and translates. You know, I just can't expect that. So
no,
that's
but
sort of
I,
the notion of it.
But, I, you know, you can see the value there, that even if you don't understand Polish, for example, you might get some idea for the rhythm and the music of what the poem sounds like.
Exactly. It's intoxicating. You sit there kind of in a trance. You know, it's like you're on another planet. And that's the way I feel.
So, Peter Sears is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's Oregon's Poet Laureate. That's the Expanding Voices project we're talking about.
You're awfully nice to ask me about that, Jeffrey. I really appreciate it because I think it's important.
Well, it's one of the major initiatives you're embracing as Poet Laureate.
Yeah, it is my big thing. And then the other thing is that I'm trying to expand sort of digitally, as it were, through Facebook and whatnot. So I would have these pieces recorded or photographed, and then I'd put that on the Facebook and on the website, so they get further support.
Well, I must say that the Facebook page makes your poetry quite accessible. I found most of the stuff that that we were looking at right there on your Facebook page.
Well, I'm glad. It took a while to be convinced of that. I was helped by a former Oregon State librarian who's wonderful at that, and it really does make a difference. I think it does help.
There are so many ways we have, obviously, of reaching out with the art form, but, I mean, do you ever worry about poetry surviving in our culture?
No, not at all. No. Well, and you know, if you talk about in our culture and which way our cultures can go and, you know, and how crude they can get or how silly or whatever, but poetry really has very much its own world. It is not lessening at all, you know, I mean, not at all. You know, there's poetry being written, there's a lot being published, there's a lot of great poetry still available. The access to the internet to poetry is remarkable. Things are very good in that way. And you know, in Oregon, there's a lot of really good contemporary poets, given the population of the state. It's terrific. You know, I mean, Lewis and Clark, just for one college, had Bill Stafford and Vern Rutsalla, two astounding poets, you know, of national prominence. So, no, it's a great state to be. I'm a New Yorker, so I really can appreciate being out here, you know.
Well, yeah.
Terrific. And people are very nice. They're very friendly. They're very available. They're not uptight.
We have an email here from Jay, no town given. He asks about rap, whether that should be considered spoken word, storytelling, or poetry.
Oh, rap? Mm-hmm. I think rap is performance poetry. It's a kind of poetry. It's quite an art form in itself. It's great that it happens. It's not traditional poetry. It doesn't purport to be. And I think there's room for everybody. I'm excited by it. I don't listen to a lot of it. You know,
any particular rappers you admire?
No, I don't know any rap. I don't know very little of it. I've heard some of it. Some of the, you know, the big winners, I've heard them at conferences. They're terrific. Jeez, it's amazing what they can do. I couldn't possibly do that. I can barely remember a poem. No kidding, you know. And so I'm just used to working on the page. I like reading poetry. I'm a bit of a ham. I discovered that a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with slam poetry and what goes on there? And
pardon me?
Are you familiar with slam poetry?
I don't know much about it. I respect it again. It's a way for people to express themselves. So I think it's great. There's plenty of room.
We had a guest on a couple of years ago that it was a fairly amazing segment in which she was talking about the need to say poetry out loud. Poetry is meant to be done out loud.
Uh-huh.
And she read some of her poems, and we read some other poems, and we had people reading poems they loved and crying on the phone. It was such a moving segment.
Well,
as you write poetry, do you say it out loud? Do you have to get off by yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to read out loud. And you actually have to read it really out loud. You have to overread it. And the reason you do that is that you have to feel your way in, sort of in between the words, and find out what's going on. And you also have to feel what's, if anything, it's awkward in the rhythms or the phrasing, or it's abstract. And I really look for those things very carefully. You know, give me a line that I don't think is clear, and it's really going to have to be a sensational image or something like that, you know, to stay in the poem. I basically just keep moving things out. I write them over in the margin, you know, as they, you know, sort of save them over there.
Mm-hmm.
I write on yellow pads, and then I eventually type it up, you know, on the computer.
Let's. Do we have another poem standing by that you can read before we go?
Sure, absolutely. Hold on.
Peter Sears again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's Oregon's Poet Laureate. We've got a couple minutes left of them. We'll see if we can get one more poem in before we go.
Here you go.
Okay.
This poem is called Dream of Following, with a nod to David Romvet. He's a poet in Wyoming. I got an idea from him. I am following my father and mother, following them, although I don't much like the idea, and I don't much like that the distance to them grows smaller. So small, I'm catching up to them. You'd think we'd have much to say to one another. We don't. My father motions me to look back over my shoulder. There's my daughter following me. That's mean of him. I want to hail her, tell her to slow down, but I don't. I turn back. They're gone.
That's Dream of Following?
Well, Dream of Following, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you write poetry, I mean, you talked about, you know, having to say things out loud and having to deal with the things that you wrote, and it's not good enough. Are there sometimes you keep things in poems that just, you know, it feels stupid to be saying this, or just feels like I'm saying too much or something, but boy, it really works for the rhythm, so I'm going to keep it.
Yes. yes, you do, I think. I mean, why not? If it works in the poem, so you really have to... You have to turn over your entire working effort to the poem rather than keeping it in your head. If it's in your head, it's simply not going to, the poem's not going to be very much. Your priority is too much your sort of ideas, your internal world. And a poem is finally an expression language. It has to live out there on the page. I mean, you know,
you gotta
I'm not
give it
sitting,
up.
You know, next to somebody over their shoulder explaining what's going on in the poem. I can't be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the poem's got to be interesting enough to them to read you know, with interest all the way through.
What advice would you give, or do you give, for that matter, as poet laureate to students who are focusing on poetry studies, the things that they should be thinking about and doing?
Well, I would say keep writing, keep writing, keep writing. Show it to people, read it to people. Don't take too seriously what they say. But do read. Read, read good, you know, read poetry, keep looking around. Hang around in bookstores, be obnoxious, read everything, don't buy anything. You know, no, you got to buy something, but just keep reading, you know, and going out and going to readings.
Uh-huh.
That's important to hear poets, good poets, reading their stuff.
All right, so
try to find a friend who's a good reader who can read your stuff. It's fun. It's a little lonely, but what the hell, you know? It's obsessive.
All right. The event tonight with Peter Sears, Oregon's Poet Laureate, is at 7:30 at the Gresham Room of the Ashland Public Library. And I really want to thank Peter Sears for taking the time to join us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Jeffrey, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here with you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.